Welcome, everybody, to The Rad Life, the only talk radio show that takes you along with host and age explorer Rod Gontos on his continuing journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older. The Rad Life is brought to you this week by Your Home for a Lifetime, a company dedicated to empowering you to stay safely, independently, and comfortably in your own home. And now here is your host, Rad Gontos.
Good afternoon, Paul.
Yes, sir. A little late today because we were trying to give our potential guests a little more time
to get on and join us,
but they may do it by phone here.
We were hoping to have Nancy here with us in person at the studio, but I think she may end up having to call in, so we're waiting on her call to come in at any time. Meanwhile, I just wanted to share a couple of interesting things. You know, we talk about boomers, we talk about Gen Xers, we talk about wannabes like me, and all that stuff. And I came across a presentation that I thought was very interesting, and I'm more than happy to share that with anybody who, if you want to send me an email to rod.gantus@gmail.com, or you can even call me if you want on my cell, 949-212-8299.
Wow.
I'll share this. It's a presentation.
Can they come over to your house and watch it with you?
No. I draw the line at coming to my house.
We have a little popcorn and we'll all watch it.
Can I just brag?
Yeah.
Okay. And I have to give a shout out to my wife for being very supportive, because I know she's listening, since she basically sent me a text message saying, is everything okay? They're playing news on the station.
Yeah. All right.
Yes. Honey, I'm sorry. I couldn't turn Paul away from the news fast enough. But I want to give her a shout out for being very supportive. I've been on a regimented menu.
You
for
have.
The last couple of weeks.
Wow, you look like you lost weight.
I have, actually. I've dropped probably about, depending on how the scale, loves me or hates me.
Whether it works or not.
Right. I've dropped about probably between 10 and 13 pounds.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And it's all for vanity. I am going to plug this. I will be featured in as one of probably about a dozen guys in I think the November issue of Riviera magazine.
Playgirl? You in Playgirl? No.
No.
Did they still do that?
No, the chest hair, the chest hair these days doesn't work. Reynolds pretty much killed it for everybody else in Playgirl. And that's an old reference for anybody, right?
We always do these boomer jokes that nobody would get unless you're of a certain age.
Okay, so for those who are younger than boomers or like me,
go Google Burt Reynolds.
Go Google Burt Reynolds, Playgirl, centerfold, no less, and you'll see what I'm talking about.
Yes.
Boy, the guy had a rug on him, needed vacuuming, didn't he?
Did.
Okay, so going back to my lovely.
Men look like men, though. I'm telling you, that was Tom Selleck and all this. I like that.
What those the staff?
John Henry.
Hey, did you see that thing that went around on social media that said that guys basically who wear facial hair is the equivalent of the mullet? Like the mullet
went out, so
people with facial hair are going to go out?
Oh, no.
So I don't know what you and I are going to do for our personality.
I'm going to say the opposite. Have you looked at ads lately for hipster kind of clothing? Go look at GQ. Go look at some of the ads that are running aimed at kind of the millennial guys.
Yeah.
And there is a new hairstyle, very short hair, but very long ZZ Top kind of beards. Another one you got to go Google.
Yeah, ZZ Top. Google ZZ Top.
But these long, as my friends like to call mine, the Civil War Robert E. Lee kind of beard hair.
It is. It's very.
I saw a guy at
Confederate,
and I saw a couple of young guys at something. He was all tattooed up.
Yep.
And there he had this, and really like almost a buzz cut, and then this really long Santa Claus kind of beard.
Okay. Well, I'll plug another one of my projects, which is called Men Essentials.
There you go. See?
Men Essentials, if people look at their website, they will see it. Actually, the personality is exactly that. He's in a tie,
mm-hmm,
and a shirt, rolled up sleeve. The tattoos are coming out from underneath the sleeve.
Yep.
And he's got a very much what you would call a Robert E. Lee, again,
Google
Robert E. Lee. Okay. It's been too long for civics, and American history.
Right.
But Robert E. Lee beard and very tight short hair.
Yeah.
And young hipster, quote unquote, right?
Yeah.
So
But I don't know how this started, but I'm seeing it everywhere, and especially in Real Hip grooming publications.
And I think that's why some of the people are saying, you know, it's like so trendy, which, again, the people who know me know that the word trendy for me is a four-letter word. You know, so trendy that it will go the way of the mullet. I don't think so, but nice try, folks, right?
I don't think so.
I think it's really a bit of follicle hatred.
Not penis envy, follicle envy
from those who can't really grow a beard. So I'm going to share a little trick. Paul probably knows this, but in order, gentlemen, to grow a full beard, you actually have to go through the ugly phase of letting the sprouts grow on your face until they all fill in, and then you can shave it. And this is brought to you as a public announcement from those of us who are facially blessed.
Why wouldn't every man in America love to have a beard? Why women provide, and it'll go to the bigger question you brought, why is it that today's male icons, to me, look like prepubescent teenage boys? They have to have every piece of facial hair and body hair removed so they look like they're 13-year-old boys to me instead of men.
I don't know.
Men are hairy.
Well, actually, you know what? Let's look at that for a minute. I think part of it is, again, we've talked about this on the show before, is that fascination with youth, like everything that is youthful and young is basically of value, and as people get older, they become less valuable.
Yes.
And I'm really hoping, because I am approaching that, but, you know, so maybe it's sort of wishful thing on my part.
Yeah.
I'm really hoping that with 72 million people, you know, being the boomers, that again, once again, your generation, Paul, will lead the way in making that be acceptable. I mean, we used to have back in the 80s where if you were anybody who was wearing less than a certain size jeans, then you were basically fat. And that was not acceptable. You pretty much, you know, they hid you. They shipped you off somewhere, right? You wore muumuus or something, right?
Well, even recently, Kate Moss a couple of years ago was super thin as a British supermodel, and people were very critical of her.
Right.
What kind of image are you putting out? Or in my era, it was twiggy.
But listen to the irony of what we're just talking about, right? We started this conversation, me saying I lost weight in order to basically appear well in a magazine, right? And then I'm saying, please, let's accept everybody.
I wasn't going to go there, but...
See, there is part of it. It's like going to the 50th anniversary of your high school reunion.
Yeah.
Suddenly you have to go out and look better. You can't show up and look fat or bald or hairy or whatever.
Well, and I'm not going to share it with you in case our guest does call in.
Yes.
But I will tie this in with the topic at hand. Okay. Nancy Hedricks is actually the program manager for the Braille Institute.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I'm not sharing with you how I'm going to tie it in, but I already know how I'm going
to
tie it in.
Waiting to see this one.
Okay. Well,
waiting to see this one.
There you go. Right. But I do want to, again, you know, thank my wife for being very supportive through this process of my, you know, appealing to my vanity.
She's just trying to kick your butt and make you look better. That's awesome.
I think she's younger, so maybe there is a hidden agenda.
Yeah,
maybe she, you know, but knowing my wife, she's okay with me whether I'm.
Is she, a little younger or a lot younger?
No, this is not a child bride that I ordered.
Okay. I don't know.
Although I have been accused by a guy I know recently, like, oh, so how's your child bride? Did you take her to Disneyland?
Yeah. Right?
My wife is 11 years younger than me.
Oh, okay. So that's in our society, that's a difference.
That's
right?
A cradle robber? Is that no?
I went out many, many years ago. The very first woman I was deeply in love with and had a relationship with for a few years when I was in my 20s was 13 years older than I was, and that was pretty freaky. That was weird. The weirdest was when I brought her to meet my dad, and we went to a restaurant, and I got up to leave, and my dad was at the time in his 50s. I'm in my 20s, and my girlfriend's in her 30s, and the waiter assumed that the 50-year-old man was with my girlfriend, that made more sense, a 50-year-old man with a 30-year-old than a 30-year-old with a 20-year-old.
Wow.
That made sense.
Yeah, no, and it's funny because you and I shared that as well.
I think she's calling.
I had an affinity also, and a lot of my relationships were with older ladies from when I was even in college. But, no, you know, when it's right, and... I am very lucky to be married to the lady that I'm married to. The thing about this is, again, you know, we are really subject to a society that's very visually driven. I happen to be in a field that is very visual, right? I mean, I make my money selling people on what their spaces are going to look like and how that's going to translate into their businesses flourishing. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And the images that the customer will carry in their head,
right,
having been in that space.
Right,
oh,
right.
That's cool, or that's, I got to go back there.
Right. So the interesting thing about this, and is Nancy online with us?
She is.
Okay.
She's listening to this, wondering,
so,
how did I
get involved in this show? Right. So the thing is that we do live in a very visual society.
Yes.
Okay, and we just take it for granted that we live in a visual society. You and I basically just, you know, you wear glasses, I don't wear glasses. But
more so than ever before, and I'll tell you, maybe this will lead into the conversation here with your guest, but I've noticed for a long time being in the communications industry that we communicate visually more than ever before.
Oh.
We have little signs with little, you know, cross a circle and a line through it, and you're not supposed to do this, or nobody tells it to you.
The conveyance of information is done very much in that, because there is a lot of truth for a picture paints a thousand words.
Right.
Especially in a culture, I mean, I come from a culture that's maybe more of a romanticized language base, okay, where the language has a flowery descriptiveness to it that paints a picture in the person's mind. Okay. The Western culture is actually a lot less flowery. I mean, unless you're like a Shakespeare and they look at you and go, you know, you're the odd kid in class kind of thing, right? It's very, very function-driven language.
Twitter.
It's what, 42 characters or less or whatever.
God knows
what, whatever.
140 characters.
Is it 20 characters now on Twitter? You know, it probably just keeps shrinking. But we are very much in a visually driven society, and we take it for granted. Okay, and yet we just assume that everybody operates on this level. And we have a guest with us today, Nancy Hedrick. Is it Hendrick? Nancy, what's the last
name?
Hendrickson, sorry. Hendrickson. You know what? I know a Gary Hedrick in San Clemente, and I'd known him for a very long time, so I apologize for that. I keep going back to his name. But, Nancy, why don't you introduce yourself and tell all our listeners a little bit about your background and what you do?
Okay, great. Well, I've been with, I am actually the manager of educational programs here at the Braille Institute in Orange County at our center here. And actually, it's in Orange County, but in Anaheim, right by Knott's Berry Farm. I have been with Braille for about 29 years. Started out working with students, teaching them independent living skills, cooking skills, and sewing skills way back in the 80s. As time went on, I went into working in the field, doing some trainings, now I'm in this position, which really allows me to be able to educate a lot of people in the community about our programs and services, and conduct trainings to train medical professionals about working with people with low vision, to no vision.
And so how do you react to what we started off rambling here, as we always do at the beginning part of the show? You know, we're always talking about this journey of getting older and how even the baby boomers, he's talking about losing weight, and I'm talking about my gray beard and everything. We're still so visually cued, visually driven. You know, it's bad if you have gray. It's bad if you go bald. It's bad because everybody who sees you reacts to the visuals, and yet you're in a world where obviously that can't take place here.
Correct. Well, it is true. Here at Braille Institute, when the students begin to lose their vision, and I would say that only 15% of the population is totally blind.
Mm-hmm.
That means that there's a large population that has low vision,
right,
which means that they're able to maybe see shapes, maybe able to see a little color, or maybe just even black and white. But whatever it is, we teach them how to use what remaining vision they have, and to their best abilities. Is it, you know, for instance, technology. Let's start with technology because that's so up and coming. Technology out there that will allow somebody to go onto a computer and enlarge the font.
Mm-hmm.
Screen reading programs that will allow the student or the person to listen to everything on the computer. How to use your iPad and your iPhone. All the accessibility features.
Are there Braille keyboards? So if I want to tweet or text, that I can still participate in it? And then how would I know what somebody had tweeted or texted to me?
Well, again, it depends on the sight loss. If they're not seeing anything, then that it will read to them. But the keyboard is the same keyboard that everybody else uses.
Right.
Remember, when we're learning to type, we learn to type without looking at the keys.
Mm-hmm.
Most of us do, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we teach our students the same thing, but there are programs that can be purchased for the computer. There are free programs
right.
that actually will read. It's what they call a screen reading program.
Mm-hmm.
We'll read to them. So if they're typing in the computer, it might read back to them. If somebody sends me something who's totally blind, or I send them something, they'll be able to listen to it. They could take it, and they can maybe even print it in Braille.
Because it would just seem to be hard to be part of American culture today if, obviously, you know, so much of what we do, we drive, we watch, we react to the visuals that people present, how they're... what they look like is so important, it seems like, in our society here. And yet,
well, you know,
you rob somebody, you take that away from somebody, how do they participate
in
that same...
You know, it's funny. I didn't really connect the dots so much until Nancy, you just said what you said. But, you know, if we drive, right?
Right.
We drive, and mm-hmm. you're not supposed to look at your phone. So when I get a voicemail, now it goes to text
mm-hmm.
or it goes to voice.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it prompts me that thing. So in fact, we are using technology in a way that maybe not doesn't utilize one of our senses, but utilizes another for a different reason. We don't have a diminishing capacity mm-hmm. or a disability, if you will. But the other thing too is, and this is, I find this very interesting. When I started doing aging in place, and I know Nancy, you spoke to the National Aging in Place Council in Orange County, I think recently, right?
Yes, last
okay.
week, as a matter of fact. Yes.
Yeah. So the interesting thing for you speak kind of like my magic trick, right? I would tell people when I talk to them, I'd say, you're older, like my dad. I did it with my dad and my mom. I said,
why are you pointing?
They're like, well,
at me?
Well, I pointed at Paul in case you're
old.
Yeah, but well, you're my profile boomer, right?
I am.
Yeah, right. So
we always say Rod, because Rod's younger than he's below the minimum age allowable for boomers.
Ooh, ouch!
So I'm a true boomer. I'm going to be 60 in a few months here. So I always say, son, you're just a wannabe.
I'm a wannabe. So, but the thing about it is, if you hold down your control key.
Yeah.
And you roll your roller on your mouse.
Yeah.
Everything on your screen enlarges.
Oh, yeah.
If you roll it down, it shrinks.
I learned that trick a couple of years
right,
ago.
Right.
I needed to.
So the funny thing about that is there are, I think what they call them assistive technologies,
mm-hmm.
that are already built into Microsoft. I think either Facebook, I think it's Facebook, just recently basically allocated a lot of resources towards sort of an accessibility laboratory, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That is a big part of technology.
It has to be, because we're getting
in the
older.
Way, in the way that the interface is programmed and so forth. And, you know, you used to go to websites where if you were senior-friendly as a website, you had the smaller A and the bigger A and the bigger A at the top, so you could
right.
click on it and your text would enlarge, which I always found kind of humorous, because all you'd have to do is hold the control key down and roll your roller, and it would do exactly the same thing. Right, but that technology has been around for a long time, and it's a requirement from a lot of companies that are in this kind of product because of the ADA
yes.
regulations that are on the books.
I know people in this county hate government regulations. This is a Republican county and all that, but I'll tell you what, I think the American Disability Act, pushed by Republican Bob Dole
yes.
and others, has been such a wonderful thing, and I wasn't so sure. When I owned bars and restaurants, of course, we complained. We had to do all these things to conform, and oh, how horrible this is, but it allows a fuller range of people to come in and enjoy places here. And I'm even thinking, when you were talking about who the guest was here, I'm in an office suite,
mm-hmm.
and in this building, I guess there must be an ADA compliance rule that in addition to the suite number outside, there is it's in Braille as well.
Well, and it's funny because there's still, I don't know if you find this, Nancy, it'd be interesting to see from your perspective or from the people that you help and what their perspective is, but, you know, I'm by profession, I'm a commercial interior designer, and I tell people that, you know, it's unfortunate that when it comes to actually meeting special needs or adhering to ADA, that ADA is really a minimum approach.
Yeah, right. It's
you know,
not
that
a maximum.
We should, that the opportunity really lies in possibly universal design, where you, I know you and the Braille Institute has this sort of, you know, independent living, equal quality of life approach as much as possible, and that the disability is something that you know, if the world around us, the built environment, everything around us was actually done from the perspective where it'd be universally usable by everybody,
mm-hmm.
then I wouldn't be basically be shrugging my shoulders and dragging my feet
right.
to go get that sign that has the Braille on it, or making sure that my menu has the ability to translate across the disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it blows my mind. I think it actually screams. For me, it makes me angry. It angers my sort of social justice side, and that's not just limited to this particular, you know, to sight, but
right.
but everything. I mean, and we talk about it from seniors. Oh well, seniors need a little extra help, right? Nancy just said 15%. Didn't you say just 15%, Nancy?
Yes.
Yeah, are actually completely blind.
Right. So there's a range of other.
So people that are basically with diminished sight, why are you printing those menus with the small letters on them? Why are you putting lighting in that restaurant where I can't see, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's fascinating how society is accepted that that's okay, and in a way discriminates against people.
So is it getting better? Nancy, is the Braille Institute and others, are we?
Okay, I'm off my soapbox.
Are we getting more? Comfortable with the idea of accommodating everybody? It's been how many years since the ADA was passed? 20 years or something? It's been a while.
It's been quite a while, yes. Well, I think it's us educating. It's all of our five centers. We do have five centers here in Southern California. And it's getting the word out. It's helping people to understand what they need to do. And it's also educating our students. We teach them what will best work for them. For instance, contrast, we're talking about interior design.
Yeah.
If we could,
mm-hmm.
our buildings here in Orange County are built to where the buildings are white, but all the trim on the windows and the doors are dark.
Strong contrast
is so important.
Yeah.
So if we say, if you can paint your house or have somebody maybe just outline the trim,
mm-hmm.
which would help you.
Mm-hmm.
Putting maybe on steps,
mm-hmm.
they all blend.
Mm-hmm.
Put a line across the steps, a contrasting color, a bright red
right.
or a yellow, and that would help you. So there's little tips and ideas that will help. But again, it's up to us and even the ADA to say, hey, this is what needs to be done.
When we've talked right. about this a lot, when my father, before he died, he was in his 90s, and he started falling a lot and tripping a lot and dragging his feet. And 10 years before my mother died, she was doing the same thing. I never realized what a hurdle 2 inches can be at a curb or an inch at a threshold to a door or anything. So I can imagine that some of these little improvements could make major differences for people with any sort of disability.
Well, and here's the thing where it's sort of quality of life, right? Because the approach can be, well, I'm going to do what, and again, we're talking in tiers, I know, but that really applies
right.
across the board, I think. Okay, we can take it where it's like, well, I'm going to do what I'm going to do, and then I'm going to go back and I'm going to put a tape on top of that carpet, you know, step or that stone step that's going to be like now, you know, literally an afterthought, almost like an afterthought,
yeah.
because I'm not going to be told what to do. In fact, the opportunity lies in actually making your space more comfortable, color contrasted, and what that means, because regardless of what your current condition is, your abilities or diminished abilities are, you are, in many cases, if it's a restaurant or if it's retail or whatever, you are a consumer.
Yeah.
Okay, you are.
That's an interesting way. Have you ever thought about the consumer power, the consumer buying power of people with sight disabilities here? Does anybody ever bring that to the retailer's attention? Say, hey, look, you don't want to lose this group of people.
Well, you know, actually, when we have classes and we're teaching a skill, when we're teaching them about being in the kitchen and going back to being able to prepare meals, there's a lot of devices out there that are sold for, you know, for anyone to purchase that
mm-hmm.
will help visually impaired. But there's also devices out there that are specifically designed for people with low vision or any type of disability. There's catalogs. We have a store in Los Angeles that people can purchase these items that make life a little bit easier. But
mm-hmm.
there's always a way to adapt even without purchasing these other things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are ways. So we teach our students all those ways they choose what works best for them, because everyone's an individual. They have different needs, different likes. They have different degrees of sight loss. You could have 20 people in a room with macular degeneration.
Right.
And they will all tell you they see a little bit differently, yet they all have wet mac or they all have dry mac. So, again, we have to really look at the person individually to see what really works for them.
I didn't realize that the Braille Institute works with anybody other than those, what we would, I don't know if it's correct to say the blind anymore here, but I thought the Braille was just, you know, obviously it was a reading system for people who couldn't see. And I thought that was the principal focus of what they've done. You're saying that you've expanded those services and offerings and outreach to people who are have other eye
which
loss.
Right. We do. We see people with all different types of eye diseases, macular degeneration, glaucoma, mm-hmm. diabetic retinopathy, mm-hmm. Retinitis pigmentosa, people who may have suffered a mild stroke which
right.
affected their optic nerve. So it's all different types of eye diseases, but our goal is not just to teach Braille, which is very, very important, but to teach people how to live life independently, confidently, and safely.
There you go.
And continue living a normal, happy, independent lifestyle. And it goes from orientation, mobility. How do I get around now that I can't drive my car? To how do I cook in the kitchen? How do I paint? How do I go bowling again or golfing or mm-hmm. enjoy my life? So it's all those things, learning all about the technology so they can keep up and do what.
And how do I live in a society that is so visually driven?
Exactly.
Well, and a lot of the stuff that Nancy just listed, okay, and I mean we are primarily sort of a boomer focused or a life journey mm-hmm. focused show, Journey of Aging. A lot of these things, basically, I've heard over and over and over, especially in the last few recent years, from directors of sort of assisted living businesses and so forth, that you know these are conditions that they are facing in their facilities. Okay, and so the way their facilities are done, again, are senior sensitive, shall we mm-hmm. say. They're ADA, of course, because they're commercially, so the minimum ADA compliance is required. But even in those situations, there still needs to be a wing or a few rooms or whatever are then taken to the next level in order to meet those conditions. Mm-hmm. And they're not yet. They're starting to have to do them because they're getting cases where people who have these realities are looking for a place to be in an assisted living facility.
Yeah.
Right? And I think
they have to accommodate a wider range of things than they're thinking of.
You said the magic word, Nancy, which we cannot agree more. I mean, we say it over and over and over. It's really about quality of life and independence. It's about not ostracizing anybody for any reason, and especially when there's no reason. I mean, there is a way to not do that.
And that's another key I hear over and over again that I saw big time. And I'm trying to draw this in my experience, because I don't have any experience with neither of my parents lost really any of their eyesight in the process. But I think that we don't really understand how important it is to stay independent, to not institutionalize people for any reason. Whether they're old or lost their sight or can't hear or have some other... The more people can be independent, that is so important. I saw this, my parents lost their independence, couldn't drive or whatever, because they just, you know, weren't comfortable doing that anymore here. And how that just affected their whole life and things went downhill. They could not be independent. Yeah. Losing your independence is the worst thing possible.
Nancy, I'm curious. Are you seeing... And this is maybe going back to sort of the bad side of technology. Are you seeing increased conditions in people maybe in certain age brackets that you didn't have before due to overexposure to things like time in front of the monitor, cell phone, stuff like that? Because I do. My brother-in-law is a laser eye surgeon, and there's definitely a concern in that community about overexposure to technology devices and how that affects sight.
Staring at a screen all day.
Are you seeing that? Are you guys anticipating an increase because of that exposure to technology and usage?
No, we really haven't seen that. And as far as I know, we have not seen anything like that. Mostly it's some type of eye disease, such as MAC or diabetic retinopathy or something.
How about that one? Diabetes is a runaway killer in this country here, whereas people are eating poorly and gaining. We seem to be getting much heavier and more diabetic in the process here from early on.
Exactly, and people don't realize that their eyesight can be affected, and by the time they realize that, it's
too late. They've lost it,
They've lost it. So we do see a lot of people.
So are we anticipating, because we're going to live longer, because we're not eating as well, because we stare at computer screens or don't wear, we're in sunny Southern California where so many people still want to go out and just walk through the sunlight and everything here, are we going to see more glaucoma and eye diseases and other things as a result of all this stuff here?
You know, I can't really answer that because we're not a medical facility. Mm-hmm. I will say that, you know, if people do not take care and manage their diabetes, we are going to see an increase. And we at Braille Institute have seen an increase. I know with macular degeneration, it is what they call age-related, of course. Protecting your eyes is so important, and eating fruits and vegetables is important. You know, wearing your sunshades all the time.
Okay.
But also, we're seeing, too, that people who are getting the injections, if that's their case, if they have wet MAC and they have the injections, sometimes it holds it off for a few years. It hits a plateau where it doesn't get worse. It doesn't get better, but it gets to that point where it's stabilized.
What is wet MAC?
Yeah, would you?
I don't know the difference.
That wet MAC is there's bleeders, the macula in the back, and dry is. Well, anyways, like I said, I'm not a medical facility.
Yeah, I'm just trying to get a rough understanding. There are different types of macular degeneration.
There's wet and dry, and I really don't want to get into that because I don't want to give any misinformation.
Got it.
Not a medical. But anyways, so again, it depends on, you know, what kind of treatment's out there, and does it get better, and is there laser treatments or injections or pills that can slow the progression, and we're seeing a little bit of that with people who have macular degeneration.
So is your foundation created to just help people as they develop eye problems stay independent and continue to live, or are you out advocating and trying to do preventative education as well, folks?
That's a good question. Yeah.
For
eye diseases, eye problem. I mean,
awareness, I guess.
Yeah. Are you out trying to say to people, hey, beware of this and don't do this, and we don't want to end up having you lose your sight, or are you strictly there as an assistance to people as they do lose their sight? Those who do lose their sight.
Right. Well, we're more of helping people after they start to lose their vision, mm-hmm. helping them. We don't go out and say, this is how you save your sight.
Right.
Again, because we're not a medical facility.
Right. So you're not an advocacy group. You're just really an assistance center.
Right. And all our services are free, which is fantastic.
I didn't know that.
So, yes, we are a non-profit organization, and all our services are free of charge. We do not charge.
Where's the biggest need right now in your organization? What do you need more? You need more money? You need more volunteers? You need more public awareness? You need more? What do you need more of? All of that?
How do people?
All of the above.
Okay.
All of the above.
All right. Because sometimes people say, you know, well, I wish I could. I've only got one. If I could get one message across, it's this. Or if we could get somebody to fund this, boy, that would be great.
Well, and this is sort of building on Paul's question. It's like, you know, do you, when you go out, and I know you do quite a bit of it, when you go out into the community, do you guys advocate for anything in particular, or is it more of an awareness of the condition? I mean,
sounds like it was really just assistance, that they're there as a, they just want to make people aware
that there are resources available.
Yeah, we're
a resource, but we do training, so we train medical professionals. I have UCI resident physicians coming in.
Yeah.
And they're doing their geriatric rotation. They come in and get some training.
Mm-hmm.
We have USC pharmacists, their fourth year, who are doing their geriatric rotation, come in and learn a little more about how to work with people who have low vision or to no vision.
Mm-hmm.
We have a program with Stanbridge College right now with their occupational therapist students
mm-hmm.
coming in, and it's a kind of a win-win situation for both of us. But it's really letting the community know that we're here, that we can provide this service free of charge to anybody who starts to lose their vision, and that we can really enhance somebody's life and help them to live.
Nancy, I'm gonna ask you a question that's kind of maybe it's a little off topic, not off topic, but in building on what you just said is, have you ever had a situation where you guys have offered that kind of training or that kind of exposure to people that are in my profession, interior design?
Hmm.
How
to accommodate people with vision problems here.
Once in a great while, somebody in your profession does contact us.
Yeah.
Or we might be contacted by a builder who's saying, "We're building a
right.
new facility. Help us with the lighting. Help us with
help us to see what we can't see."
Exactly. What colors to paint the walls? What type of lighting?
Right.
How would they maneuver safely, ambulate around the facility safely? What can you offer us? And our orientation mobility specialists will go out. Maybe our low vision consultants will go out and help them with the lighting. Yes, we do that on occasion.
I might reach out to you later and talk about how possibly to put that as a presentation or awareness thing, either through a workshop format or as a presentation at either through one of the organizations locally or maybe even spearheaded under me, because I really believe that that's the kind of information that, unless, like you said, you are working on a particular thing,
mm-hmm.
people are not aware of, and that if they were aware of it, it actually would impact their work and improve their offerings to their end
and
users,
you know,
quite a bit.
Three different groups, at least, that could benefit from that. The Society of Interior Designers.
There's a couple of them. But,
yeah.
I mean, I'm just saying that...
But the architects as well who have to spec out these plans, the basic structures, and then maybe even the builders and developers who often see this as, oh, my goodness, they're going to make me do this. I don't want to do that.
Well, it's going back to this. Okay, unless you're working on a project where it is in your scope and you're getting paid to basically care enough to find out,
right.
That's fine. But everything that you build, everything you put into the environment for people to interact in, right, there will be people with these conditions or with these realities that will interface with that space.
Well, particularly the kind of clientele you do like
yeah.
big hotels and stuff.
Well,
we do
retail, we do restaurants, you know, we do wellness centers.
Yeah, when you did the Four Seasons.
We did, the funny thing is a lot of this technology can be infused and not deter from what you're trying to accomplish.
Yeah.
And at the same time, now you have this added benefit built into it. So,
right. Don't do it just to comply. Do it to differentiate yourself and to accommodate a wider spectrum of people.
How many people, unless they really need to, or basically are you know, in an occupational therapy position or something of that nature, or a medical field, know what it's like to live with low vision? I don't think people realize what maybe is involved. I know I don't, and okay. I could use an orientation.
Do you ever have, Nancy, of people come to you as clientele? They're losing their vision, they've lost their vision, and they say, gee, I wish hotels or somebody could understand this better. I wish they had a greater appreciation so that, the reverse of that would be, do they come back and say, you know, we shop at this place, we frequent these kinds of businesses
because
they do get it and they accommodate us?
Not too many with that,
okay.
with the latter. Usually they'll come and say, I wish they did, but what we tell our students is, you know, tell them, explain to them,
mm-hmm.
visually impaired, I frequent this place, you know, it would be helpful if you would do this for us. When we teach students how to go shopping, a lot of times what really works for our students is to call ahead of time and speak to a manager and say, I'm visually impaired, I need to come in and do some shopping, I'm going to bring my list, do you have somebody to assist me?
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll have this conversation with the manager, and the manager might say, how can I help help you? How can we design this, or what can we do to help you out?
Yeah.
And a lot of times our students will make those suggestions, but most of the time people just assume, you know, I'm living in a different world where it is based on sight.
Yeah, that's what we started with. This seems to be a very visual world we live in here.
It's a visual world, exactly. But simple things, for instance, a hotel, putting up a fountain, things that they can listen to, auditory. We have a fountain in the center, a beautiful fountain in the center of our campus. That students use that to be able to get from point A to point B.
Orientation, yeah, absolutely.
Right, orientation.
Wow, there's one I would have so obvious I would have never thought of here.
Mm-hmm. Having the signals that have chirping noises, beeping noises, or auditory signals are so helpful. But again, we have to ask. Or we, and students living in certain cities, will tell our students, go to the city and ask for it, and they will have it installed.
Is there any areas that, any public cities that have taken this challenge up and done a better job than
more
others?
More of a proactive approach.
Yeah, is, you know, like they say in, this is a strange analogy maybe, but places like, I know there's some cities, Portland stuff, that have really made an effort to make bikes available and to make it bike friendly, and they're trying to build bike paths.
Yeah,
and everything
who's sort of a community leading in that kind of stuff proactively? Are there any, Nancy, that you know?
Any that you tout and you say, boy, if you could only be like Toledo, boy, they do it, they got it right or something, you know?
You know, we don't. You know, unfortunately, we don't know. Like I said, usually we have to ask, or the student, the person who's visually impaired, or enough people. But there are organizations. There's the Del McIntosh Center that's an advocacy for all disabilities, including low vision, or the California Council for the Blind is a proactive group as well. That
boy, I would think that's an opportunity then to find some, maybe it's a new community, and to say, you know, if you do these steps, you can get our A-plus rating here, and we'll tout you as an example of good community partners here. And the type of role model we'd like to see.
It goes back to what I was saying, Paul. It's interesting that, and I just, if I may, Nancy, Dale McIntosh Center is in Anaheim as well, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. It goes back to bare minimum compliance.
Mm-hmm.
Or universal applicability and usage.
But it would seem like there's a marketing opportunity for somebody here to step up and say, hey, we're the ones that we care. We thought about this, and we did this, and therefore we seek your business, and aren't we good people? You know, I mean, for example, there are builders now that tout themselves as green builders. There are builders that tout themselves as being having multi-generational aspects to their home so that you can have grandma stay with you or whatever here. Mm-hmm. There are people finding these little niches and they're touting them, and they're marketing themselves as somebody towards those communities, right?
Nancy, what seems to be a common maybe a repetitive concern or frustration that you hear from people that you are helping?
As far as being out in the community?
Yeah, or, you know, the struggles that they struggle with. And
if I start to lose my sight and come to you, what's the first thing they all say?
Well, I think it's to a certain extent, it's a loss of identity, first of all, to a certain extent, especially somebody who may be working or is a family member who is the sole supporter of the family. I think the loss of driving and the loss of independence.
Yeah.
The loss of independence is the big one. Now what do I do?
Yeah.
And it is huge, and that's what
Who's going to shop for me? Who's going to take me to
the
doctor?
We're very car-based.
Yeah.
Exactly. How am I going to do these things now? I lived alone, and I did everything for myself, and I prided myself on that. How do I do it now?
Mm-hmm.
So what we also offer is support groups and counseling services to help people get through that adjustment process, because it is an adjustment process.
Well, we're down to the end. I'm sorry to say it went rather too quickly here. Give us some places they can reach out to you.
Yeah, how can they get hold of you, Nancy, and maybe share the website? Yeah.
Well, great. Our website is www.brailleinstitute.org.
And let's spell that. B-R-A-I, two L's or one L?
Two L's.
B-R-A-I-L-L-E. See, even I don't know how to spell it. All right.
Institute, right. I-N-S-T-I-T-U-T-E.
Right.
.org. And our phone number here is 714-821-8255. 5,000.
That's wonderful. Nancy, I think we've just kind of scratched the surface, and my apologies for not sadly we didn't have your company in the studio, but I want to put out another invitation for you to come back anytime you'd like. I think there's, the more we talked about this, the more I realized there's so much overlap. Like, we tend to compartmentalize stuff in society where it's like, it's about aging, it's about this,
yeah,
and about that. In fact, what you are, if what you go through is something that a lot of people are going to at some point in their life deal with in some form or the other,
yes,
whether it's reduction, you know, due to age,
that's this whole journey,
accident,
this whole show, the stuff that nobody wants to think about until they have to, and we're trying to say, well, then suddenly what do? Where do you reach out? Where do you find resources? How do you deal with these things?
And I want
your own life or others' lives.
Yeah, I want to personally thank you, because what you shared today, you know, in the course of what I do every day for people, it's actually re-encouraged me to pay that extra attention rather than just kind of fall by the minimum requirement.
Rather
than
just follow the template.
Yeah. So thank you so much for joining us today, and please come back anytime you'd like. Just let me know when.
And if you have any events coming up, tell us about them. We'll try and promote them to the world here.
Okay, we will. Well, thank you so much for having us. I appreciate it. And yes, I definitely want to come back.
Okay. Thanks, Nancy. Thanks. Have a great day.
Thank you.
And thanks, everybody, for joining us.
You have been listening to the Rad Life Radio Show with your host and age explorer, Rad Gontos, brought to you on the one and only OCTalkRadio.net. Join us again next week as we continue our journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older.